Okay, Chairman Woods.
Present.
Vice Chairman Law.
Present.
Secretary Duquette.
Present.
Director Holland.
Present.
And Treasurer Heath is absent this evening.
We have a new board member?
We do.
How are you? I didn't recognize you first. I thought you were still over in the Pacific.
Oh, no, I'm back. Morning.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be back. Although the Marshall Islands doesn't have any coronavirus as of
well, they probably not.
Oh,
yeah.
They're just prohibiting anybody from
there's
going
lots
in.
Of unexploded bombs.
Minor. Good to see you.
Okay. So, let's see, minutes. Approval of the NEA public minutes of February 19, 2020. Anyone want to vote?
I'll put forward a motion to approve the minutes from February 19, 2020.
Okay, any discussion on that?
I made a couple comments to Chris for a few corrections on the minutes, but he's recorded them already yesterday.
Okay. So, with that, so with that, all those in favor of approving the minutes from February 19, 2020?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Okay. That brings us to communications.
Got a couple of communications on the agenda here. I'll defer to Manager Lynch on the 5010 report. The first item.
Well, we did the 5010 with Will Stanfield from New Hampshire DOT, Bureau of Aeronautics. To sum it up, on the very first page, overall, the airport is in excellent condition. And while we're talking about that, our markings held up rather well throughout the winter. I know we didn't plow it as much as we had in past years, but the new paint that we put on last year held up very well. No action items on the 5010.
So how often are those done?
Annually.
They are done?
Yep. Okay. And they come in, they look at things, obstruction, clearances, anything to do with the airfield.
I didn't understand the recommendations about the trees, what they were really...
They're pointing them out, they're telling you that eventually they're going to need to be taken care of.
Eventually, but at some point they're the ones that dictate, or do they kind of leave it to us?
Well, they will eventually dictate it, but they're telling us that these are the areas that we see.
Okay.
So, but like I said, overall, they're stating that the airport's in excellent condition and it's past the 5010.
Yeah.
And the 5010 is where all the information is derived for all the, not AFD, supplemental, and all the information that gets passed on via the charts, et cetera. I know you're not a pilot, actually, but when we fly, we get all this information.
Oh, yeah.
On.
Yeah.
And all that information comes from this 5010 to do with the airport.
Okay. Great.
All
right.
The next two pieces of communication are in reference to the renewal, or actually the exercise option to extend leases. I'll just read in the record the couple of petitions for that. It's from the 127 to 129 Anger Associates Condominium Group. It says, this letter is to notify the National Airport that 127 to 129 Anger Associates Condominium wishes to exercise the association's option to extend the E2157 lease for an additional 20 years commencing on February 4, 2020 and terminating on February 5, 2040 in accordance with Article 2 of the E2157 lease agreement. For building 127, and there's a second petition discrepancy in building 129, same language.
Okay, so actually, I'll address those under new business.
That's it for communications.
Okay, so that brings us to reports, and we have the tower report, and we've got to move through there. So in February, at 1718 operations, we Yeah, so the format is a little different.
Yeah, we changed the format last month when the territory rolling total.
Okay.
So for the month of February, right, you had 2019, you had 4,094, 2020, 5,812, for a net difference year over year of 17.18. So plus 42% increase.
Okay.
And a 39% increase over the previous month.
So what was the actual number of operations?
5,812.
Okay. 17, 18.
Well, that's kind of the delta versus the previous year. So that's good.
Huh.
Well, the numbers keep going up. We like that.
So they're looking like another couple months.
Yep. Okay. Brings us to airport management.
Okay. Well, recent events. I guess we'll speak briefly about the COVID-19 coronavirus. We all know what's going on with that. It's all over the news. We at the airport are trying to adhere to some of the guidelines that are set forth by the CDC and the World Health Organization, and social distancing and frequent washing of your hands seems to be the most important thing to slow the spread down, hopefully prevent the spreading. And as you saw in the news, other countries that had spikes in this, their healthcare systems are unable to deal with it adequately. So in the United States, they felt that if we can slow it down and make the curve not so drastic, spread it out over a few months, it'll be easier for the healthcare systems to handle it. So, we spread the word around the airport. There's also a lot of airport businesses that have actually closed up and are working remotely from home. And we're seeing a little lull in the activity due to that. Now, with that being said, Southern New Hampshire University has closed, as of today, this facility, as well as their campus in Manchester Hooksett, yet they're still running the flight operations program through Air Direct. upcoming events. If they actually happen, as we know, they predicted this to go through good part of the summer. But as of right now, the Commemorative Air Force is going full speed ahead with their plan to come to Nashua in June. The tour will feature the B-29 Superfortress Fifi, T-6 Texan, and the P-51 Mustang gunfighter. Unfortunately, they called me the other day and canceled the B-24 Liberator and said it's going to be down for maintenance. So that will not be here. They plan to arrive on Monday, June 8th, with the show dates from 8:10. I keep putting that in there. It's a copy-paste thing. June 10th through June 14th will be the show dates, and they'll depart Nashville on the 15th. The annual New Hampshire Aviation Museum barbecue will be held here at Nashville Saturday, June 20th, again, pending what's going on with the coronavirus. I had recently met with Bob Huff, who's associated with the Aviation Museum, and we started planning a Young Eagles event. We were tentatively scheduling for May 9th, but unfortunately with the COVID-19 coronavirus, we have canceled that, and we will look into getting the event going sometime in the fall, hopefully when all this calms down. We've missed that for the last couple of years here, unfortunately, so we really want to bring that back.
Question. Are they in the EA chapter up there?
They are working with, I believe it's the Lawrence chapter he's in.
Okay.
Is it 126? 106.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the ISD chapter here used to sponsor Young Eagles, and we ran out of Young Eagles coordinators.
Right. So the plan with talking to Bob is I knew that he was a coordinator, and he said that they usually do the event in Manchester, and he told me, yeah, we did a lot of rides last year. We did 20. I said, 20? We did like 200 here. So he goes, really? I said, you want to do it at Nashville? He said, all for it. And we suggested that he join forces with IAC 35, and we'll make it a combined event. We also have another gentleman on the field who's currently overseas in Afghanistan, and he was looking into getting this Young Eagles going before he left. And so we'll bring him into the mix, too, Paul Santana, one of our local pilots. So, okay, other items of interest. I would like to welcome Jessica Holland as our newest member to the Nashua Airport Authority Board of Directors. Very happy to have you on, Jess. I think everybody else is, everybody in the audience, all two of them. But I think you'll be a great addition to the board. I've personally known Jess for a long time. She's been a pilot here as long as I've known her, and I think you'll fit in just fine. So good luck.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here.
Hopefully we'll have a few more people to say hi to you next week.
Yeah. It's not you. That's why they're not.
Not you.
Should be more if they were worried about it.
Excuse my voice. I've been talking all day, which I know is normal for me. But, I met again with Matt Caron from Gale Associates and Dan Weeks, Revision Energy, Carol Nuola, Will Stanfield from New Hampshire Bureau of Aeronautics. We've had several meetings dealing with the possibility of bringing a solar array, 1 megawatt solar array to the Nashua Airport. In this last meeting, the New Hampshire DOT Bureau of Aeronautics and myself and Gale Associates, we determined that there is no suitable location on the airport property for the array. And it all has to do with our primary surfaces, all the surfaces around the airport. We basically have a real narrow sliver of land here that the airport sits on. And with the RPZs on either end, the way they spread out, it prevents the only place that you could have possibly put this array would have been right next to the Mausers. And that is the last place that I'm going to allow a fixed steel structure right next to the Mausers. So the long story short is, unfortunately, we cannot have the solar array here at Nashua. Wednesday, February 26th, shortly before 10 a.m., the body of Captain Ryan Phaneuf arrived here at Nashua Airport, and I'm sure everybody knows that Captain Phaneuf was killed when his plane went down in Afghanistan on January 27th. We were honored to participate in receiving Captain Phaneuf and coordinated with Nashua Fire, Nashua PD, Hudson Fire, Hudson PD, and they started a procession that started right here at Nashua Airport, closed down all the streets all the way to Hudson, and it was, you know, it was a nice tribute, and our deepest sympathies to the family and loved ones of Captain Phaneuf. On March 3rd, I attended a VIP reception at Southern Hampshire University's main campus, showcasing their beautiful new STEM education building. It's something else. It's rather spectacular, actually. And they have all types of different STEM programs in there. Some of the really neat things that I saw was the drone research that they're doing. It's really incredible. They have 3D printing labs. They're printing up all kinds of parts that they're inventing. They're working with geodesic domes and the engineering and mathematics part of it. And it's just a really impressive facility. It was a great night. I went up there with Bob Bird and Shane McLaughlin. And, good things are going on up there. And as you know, we have Southern New Hampshire University's president here at the Nashua Airport, and their numbers are skyrocketing with their students. They're supposed to be bringing another 50 students on in the next term. So that'll bring them up, you know, in the 90 student area.
50?
Yes. And I believe this is a program they still haven't even advertised. So, excuse me, on the 4th, of this month, I participated in a meeting of the City of Nashua department heads to discuss the COVID-19 issues. This was right around the beginning of when this all was, you know, coming to fruition. And there wasn't a lot known at that time, but they started talking about hand washing and, you know, not shaking hands, et cetera, avoiding the large crowds. And it's obviously progressed since then. And the city continues to meet and set up guidelines. On the 6th of this month, I held a guided tour for 28 FAA engineers here at the Nashua Airport. We toured the navigational aids, the PAPIs, the Mauser, the ILS localizer facilities. These are all engineers that are new to the FAA. They're not young students. They were all ages. They're just engineers switching fields. and going to work for the FAA, and it was actually really interesting. As much as I led the tour, there was an FAA person, excuse me, that was giving all the technical data on all the facilities here, and I actually learned a lot that day. So it was good for me, too. Great bunch of people, and I thank them because I let them know that our lives depend on what they do for us. So very important. On the 9th of this month, I met with representatives from the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services, and an engineering firm called Weston Solutions. They've all been tasked by the EPA and the New Hampshire DES to investigate airports in New Hampshire to determine if there's any presence of PFAS. If you're not familiar with it, it's a chemical that's in the firefighting foam that is used at airports. I believe, fortunately, as of now, we haven't found out that they actually ever used any here at Nashua. But this investigation has just begun. It's going to go through the summer. They just came for a site tour, overall evaluation of the airport. So we don't know exactly where this is going to go, but we were told that this is not an enforcement action. This is more of a guidance education. How do we move forward from this to prevent these things from happening in the future? Now, that PFAS that's in that firefighting foam has been banned for use everywhere except for airports. And the reason is it's basically the only way they can come up with right now to fight a fire if you had to, with, say, a serious jet crash.
Wes? I don't believe there are any hangars on the field that have automatic fire extinguishers.
No, there are not.
I know up in Manchester they've had a couple of hangars where those systems have gone off by accident, and I've seen pictures of airplanes with inside a hangar and foam up to the...
Right to the ceiling.
You see the tail sticking out.
There was one went off in Bedford, too, and I saw the photos, and it literally went to the ceiling.
And amusingly, the Manchester airport did not want Dean to open the hangar door and let the foam out on the rain. I don't know what you do at that point, but it eventually went away.
I have a follow-up question for that. Is that something that the fire department would potentially use if they were responding to an emergency here?
Yes.
So they actually have that in-store, ready and available for a specific aviation incident?
Yes.
But they wouldn't use it on a residential?
Correct. This fire department that's right out here, even though it says on it, I think it says airport fire station, it's not dedicated to the airport. With that being said, they have engine 5 in there, and they also have a small tank-like vehicle that holds all this chemical, and it is dedicated, that vehicle is dedicated to this airport if need be. So we have it here. We don't believe it's ever been let loose out here. Now, with that being said, we were told that most fire departments have to test the nozzles on a regular basis. We don't know if that's happened yet. EPA is investigating that. They'll be going through all the records of the fire department, as well as tower records. So we'll see where this goes. But it was a very nice group of people. We probably spent a good hour and a half before we even went and walked the entire field. It was educational, informative. And I think we're all on the same page. We want to be the good neighbor. We don't want these chemicals leaching into the groundwater.
So they're going to return and take soil samples?
Yep. So part of what they're going to do is they're actually going to be boring test wells in random locations, random that they choose. They were really concerned with all the outflows. And one of their primary concerns when they came here is they said, well, all this water flows northwest of the Penachuck Ponds, and I said, it doesn't. It actually goes the other way, and I showed them all our storm drain system and how it ends up in the pond across the street over here on the other side of Furman Road. And as we went over there... I'm sorry?
It goes into our pond as well.
Part of it does. That's only from an overflow. And since we unplugged all the lines when I came here a couple of years ago, there essentially is no more overflow. A little residual maybe from the streams themselves going that way, but yeah.
Good. I was going to say, are there pictures of you and the John boat up there at some point a couple years ago?
I can neither confirm nor deny. I don't know. Did I have a fishing rod in my hand? So, solo
pond over there, by the way.
I'm sorry?
That's the first solo pond over there.
That's right. Everybody gets tossed in. Okay. So, a couple other things that I just put on here tonight. I talked with Brian Bean earlier today. I'm sorry, it was yesterday. And as some of you may have heard on the news, Midway Chicago Tower was closed due to coronavirus. All of their controllers tested positive, and they had to close the facility. And if anybody knows where that is, it's a very busy airport. This would be like closing Manchester's Tower, but much busier. It's not like O'Hare, but it's really close to O'Hare, and it takes a lot of traffic.
That's where Southwest goes.
That's exactly where they go. So what they're doing is they're operating the tower remotely right now. I don't know exactly how that works. Steve might have some insight on that, but
remotely didn't have it back in my day.
Yeah. So I called Brian, and I started discussing this with Brian, and I said, well, first of all, I received a letter from the Hampshire DOT on behalf of the FAA stating that because we're a NIPIUS airport that we have to stay open. We cannot close this airport. And I thought to myself, well, if people get sick, we're not going to close the airport, but what would happen after talking to Brian is if all his controllers get sick, hypothetically speaking, the tower will close, but we will just go to an uncontrolled status on the field.
Back when I took it.
How long ago was that? 70s?
Must have been. 82 or something like that.
So we will not close the airport. And, you know, hoping that my staff, none of us come down with anything. And we've also discussed that some. If we have to, I can always work via my telephone to have communications with people. And, again, we won't close the airport. A lot of the navigational aids here on the airfield are maintained by the FAA. They're owned by the FAA and maintained by the FAA. The only navigational aids that we really maintain are the obstruction lights and the runway 32 PAPI, and obviously the taxiway lights and runway lights, which, FYI, we had a lot of taxiway lights out for a few weeks, and we were finally able to dig in the ground when the ground thawed, and we found some serious shorts under the ground. And what's happening with that, while we're on the subject, is, and I apologize, I was trying to make this short, but I'm rambling on. The system out in this field was direct bury. They were not put in ductwork, conduit. They're all direct bury. When they direct bury, they actually pull the lines, and you get nicks in the line from rocks, et cetera, and over years, which some of this was put in the 80s, you get failures. And what really makes these things fail is not everything is at 3 feet below the ground where it was supposed to be. We found some wires at a foot below the ground, and so now you're getting freezing and melting, so the thawing and the refreeze, and it's moving the wires, and we've broken. We've actually had 3 breaks that we found already this year. And we learned something interesting about this. I brought an engineer in, Dave Simmons, who's an electrical engineer, and I said, Dave, I'm completely puzzled. We have a system that's essentially a series system, somewhat of a series parallel where it goes up to the lights, jumps through the transformer, continues on in series. I don't understand how when we have a break in the line and I have no lights for, now it's a big loop too, by the way, and when we have no lights for a couple hundred yards and all of a sudden I have some dim lights and some more dim lights and it kind of wraps around the loop till the other side they're bright again, it doesn't make any sense to me, especially when we found a wire that was totally separated. As he explained to me, this system, although it maintains a certain amperage, it's constantly pushing enough current voltage through the line to make this happen. When you have a break in the line, it keeps pushing upwards of about 50,000 volts into the ground. And
right out of the ground.
He said it's coming right through the ground. He said if you went a few hundred yards away, and you put 2 metal rods in the ground 20 feet apart, and you ran something across them, you're going to have 50,000 volts there. So it's a terrible system, and it finally explained to me why we had these random lights working. So we're trying to address all these that we can, but with this, I had a meeting with Nick Ippolito the other night, and we discussed when we go to remove Taxiway Alpha, part of that move is we're going to insist on ductwork if the FAA will cover it under the program. Because, number one, it's a poor system to begin with. It's impossible to fix during the wintertime, and it's dangerous. It could be dangerous. Now, granted, we're humans. We don't have a 30-foot gate, so we're not going to step in two spots and get electrocuted. But there's still an awful lot of electricity that flows through the ground when we have these breaks. And after the meeting, I can show everybody some video that I took. When we pulled this up the other day, it looked like molten lava, volcanic rocks. I'm not a geologist, I don't know, but under the ground, and we pulled up these egg-sized pieces that were, it took sand and literally fossilized it.
Seems like we should have a long-term solution to try and get this repaired sooner than later.
Well, the time to do it will be when we move the taxiway, because all those have to be replaced at that point.
So I think people wonder about the runway lights. Are they a similar design?
I believe some of it is, yes. And, you know, hopefully those were buried 3 feet like they were supposed to be. We actually found a couple of runs of wire the other day. There's a ground wire, too. It has nothing to do with the system. It's a safety ground from light to light. Well, it's supposed to be buried 3 feet like the rest of it. Well, when we started digging the other day, well, we found one a foot below the earth. And it was all corroded, broken, so that safety ground really is broken all over the field. And it's from corrosion, being direct buried like that. There's a high iron content, and then you add electricity, water, everything. It just didn't hold up very well. We also found areas where there's actually wire on top of the ground. We found the taxiway lights the other days. We were going around checking this. I'm like, what is that? And we pulled a little bit, and it was one of the lines literally on the surface of the ground. So those kind of things we're addressing. We're going to bury those as best we can in the meantime. So that's what's going on with that. Back to the Brian Bean thing. I guess I wandered off course a little bit there. Brian Bean, after we were talking about the Midway thing with the coronavirus and the tower shutting down, he's trying to coordinate with Southern New Hampshire University and Air Direct to figure out what their peak flying times are, and he's going to try to reduce staff to one controller on at any given time to minimize the other controllers' exposure to each other. That way, if anything does happen, like he said, he's trying to minimize the exposure. With that being said, they had 400 operations on Monday, and he goes, you can't do that with one controller. It's impossible. And so Brian's doing his best, but unfortunately, you know, at the very end of the discussion was, well, if everybody gets sick, are there any backup controls to come in? He said no. They wouldn't put anybody at risk at that point, just like Midway shut it down. So we'll hope for the best there and see what happens. That's the end of my report. I'll stop talking. Any questions?
If Manchester were to, say, domestic commercial traffic were be shut down and we ran into that kind of situation, would those kind of controllers be able to come to our tower if necessary? Or is it?
No, those are federal controllers.
Apples and oranges.
Yeah, well, we're a contract tower, but they just, the idea is if everybody's contaminated in there, they're closing the facility. And he said they probably couldn't pay somebody enough money to come into it at that point either. This is honestly the conversation we had. So,
West, I'll offer another point just for your education. The way controllers have ratings, like pilots have ratings, mm-hmm. So these controllers are rated for this tower. Mm-hmm. They could go away, work somewhere else, and come back, and they still have rated. But the guys in Manchester almost certainly don't have the training to work in this tower.
And we've had guys come in from approach control and from center. They lost it first. It takes a while to get up to speed. It really does.
This is a very busy airport, as we've discussed in the past. We're the busiest in New Hampshire, second busiest GA airport in New England, and it requires a checkout. is what Wes is talking about. And they've had controllers come in here, like Steve just described. They come in here, they're checked out on all phases at other airports, and it takes them 3 or 4 months before they're checked off, signed off on their own here. We're that busy. So.
Okay. So you
want to
give Nick a call?
Sure.
Battery 90%. Connected to iPhone.
While he's doing that, I'll mention that down in Virginia, there's an experiment with a remote tower where they have video cameras, and the staff are in the window of this room far away. You know, they remote tape radios. And that's actually apparently a pretty successful experiment.
Hi, Nick. This is Chris Lynch, National Airport Authority. You are on speakerphone in the authority meeting.
Hey, guys. How's everyone doing?
Hi. Very well. And you? How are you feeling, Nick?
I'm doing all right.
Good and healthy.
Been working from home all this week. And, you know, just trying to stay safe.
Good. Sure. Okay, so we called you to have you go over the engineer's report. So whenever you're ready.
Yeah. So the GAIL is administering a single project on behalf of the airport at this point, and that is the pavement maintenance project. According to your monthly update, it says that the grant applications were signed by Chris and forwarded along to NHDOT. I confirmed with NHDOT they received those on February 20th, and they let me know that they would be including those in their block grant application for May 1st. Provided that funding is given by the FAA, we should be ready to start before August. So at this time, there's no recommended actions. We're just sort of in a waiting pattern.
Okay.
Are there any questions on the update?
We've already told us this before, yet, but when can we expect to hear about the grant?
Well, because it's a block grant, FAA usually issues those before a lot of the other grants are issued. I've seen them come in as early as late June, with the grant application deadline being May 1st with FAA. It takes them a month or so to process everything and then get everything issued. By the time it circulates for signatures, it'll probably be the June meeting, so we are looking at getting the contractor under contract in late June, early July, and then starting early to mid-July.
Okay, thank you.
So while we have Nick on the phone, I'd like to add one more thing for the engineer's report. I received a letter this afternoon, late this afternoon, from Carol Nawola from New Hampshire DOT Bureau of Aeronautics. I will read the letter. Chris, congratulations on the selection of Borefield's airport consultant for the 2025 term. We received your letter dated March 9, 2020, noting the selection of the consultant team of GAIL Associates, Inc. for airport planning and engineering for the following projects from your airport CIP. She listed off 6 projects, the rehabilitate taxiways, taxi lanes, relocation taxiway alpha, purchasing de-icing equipment, purchase SRE, rehabilitate apron, and address airport hazard lighting systems. The New Hampshire DOT Bureau of Aeronautics concurs with the selection of GAIL Associates for Borefield's upcoming 5 years of projects. So that is good news, and congratulations, Nick, to you and your team, and I look forward to continuing to work with you.
All right, thank you very much. We're looking forward to it as well.
Okay. Well, does anybody else have anything else for Nick?
So, for my education, I guess, would we were just talking about the lighting issue. Would that correspond at all with this? And if it does that help our project get approved?
No, the airport hazard lighting are things like obstruction beacons, hazard beacons.
I heard you say you wanted to put this in context.
It's in the taxiway alpha relation project.
And that's different.
Yeah, right at the second project on their list. And Nick, while I have you, we were talking about this before we brought you on the phone. I briefed everybody about what we found in the taxiway lighting and the buried system. versus conduit ductwork, and how when we go into the Taxiway Alpha relocation, we're going to try to get everything put in ductwork and cans as well. Everything's direct bury right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the runway, because it's a high-intensity circuit, was eligible for completely being within ducts, so there's no direct bury cable for the runway circuit. We're going to shoot for that with the taxiway, although the taxiways, there are no high-intensity taxiway edge lights. So it may come down to just some tricky justifications as to why we needed it duct, which we've had good experience with NHDOT in the past. You guys remember with the taxi lane project, we had to justify why we needed to pave wider than the standard width, why we needed to porous pavement, and there was something else. But NHDOT has been good to work with as far as you know, preparing and approving these justification packages. So I'm hoping for the best. It's, you know, something that obviously having the issues you have warrants some additional protection, and I think conduits would do that. So let's hope we can get that justified.
Perfect. And if I can add one more thing, and this doesn't have to do with the lighting, and I apologize, I'm reverting back to the manager's report. Today we acquired a piece of SRE through the GSA service, snow removal equipment through the government surplus. And we got a rather large H-series Oshkosh blower from the Air Force. And although it needs some work, like most things that we get from them, overall it's in excellent condition. It only has about 1,000 hours on it. And we got it running today and drove it around the field, and it's an incredible piece of machinery. So we'll be revisiting our CIP and probably not looking for a new rotary piece of snow removal equipment.
That's great.
Because, yeah, this will do the job. And best part is it was free. So
excellent.
Yep, we paid approximately $2,700 to ship it here.
So come this year's CIP meeting, we can address that with NHDOT, and we'll shuffle around projects from the out years to move them forward to accommodate that extra slot now.
Beautiful. Okay, Nick. Well, that's all I have.
All right. Well, thank you for dialing me in. And if anyone needs anything, please don't hesitate to call me.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. Okay,
thank you,
Nick.
All right.
Good night.
Guys, take care.
Bye.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Well, I know on the FAA buys you snow removal equipment, you're obligated for like 10 years. When you get it from via the channel, you're getting this. What's your obligation?
2 years to keep it. Yep. Okay. And if we decide we don't like it at that point, we can sell it.
Okay.
We'll keep the proceeds as long as they go for aeronautical maintenance, anything to do with the airfield, essentially.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's a night and day machine. We'll give Matt Farabee again the credit for coming up with that on the GSA.
That's a great find.
Yeah, this is machine's incredible.
So with that, committees, we have no outstanding committees at the moment. Full business, I see a solar item, but I think we covered that in the report earlier, Chris.
Yes.
Okay, so new business. It's not on the agenda, but you know, we did get the communications from the folks in buildings 127 and 129. So the deal last month and the previous month, what we were looking at is folks were exercising an option to renew for another 20. And the way the wording worked is that they were entitled to that option, and what was left for us to vote on were the terms and conditions. And we voted to keep the terms and conditions consistent with the current leases. In this case, the folks in 127 and 129, their lease has expired. It expired on February 4th. So, technically, that's a problem, but, realistically, it's like, those buildings should stay as heat hangers. What that means to us as a board is, we should vote to you know, we would need to vote to grant the extension and the terms and conditions. So, again, what we did last month is, we kept the terms and conditions the same for 20 years, and we also offered an option of a following 20-year extension. So, with that, we can now have some language for a motion. Paul Scar is representing 127 and 129. He told me he wouldn't be able to make it tonight. So again, this is pretty much the same deal as we have with the other buildings. I'm proposing that we grant the 20-year extension for 127 and 129, and we keep the terms and conditions, consistent or the same as what are in the existing leases. And then we also grant them the option of extending another 20, down the road. And then finally, it's like the Airport Authority, draw paperwork for the lease extensions to be filed with the Hillsborough County Registry of Deeds, and the condo association will pay the recording fees, which I think are like $20 each.
But they're 25.
25?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just wrote that.
So the file that Susan sent me happens to show in a column titled expiration if extended twice through February 5th, 2060. Are you saying that currently the current extension ends in 2040 and we need to add that extra one?
Well, what I'm saying is that we have an opportunity to extend the lease to these two properties into March of 2040.
Right.
And to be consistent with what we've done, in the past couple of meetings, we should grant them an option to extend for another 20 beyond that. Again, it's an option that they would need to exercise down the road.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I was just trying to understand if this was not already built into the current lease.
Yeah, I think the lease has ended last month.
Correct.
And then that completion of twice renewed, whenever it would be 2060, because the first 20 gets you to 40, the second 20 gets you to 40.
All right, I'll ask. I'm just trying to understand the spreadsheet as well.
Yeah, so this is done as of now.
Yep.
And they're basically asking 2020.
Works as a major.
Yep. Any issues with the language as is?
Sure. Okay. We'll put forward a motion to be voted here that the 127, 129 Hanger Associates condominium, the associates, are requesting that we approve their request to extend leases E2157 for building 127 and E2158 for building 129, which currently expired on February 4th, 2020. And we extend those for an additional 20-year term. That term to be from March 18, 2020 through midnight March 17, 2040, containing the same terms and conditions as previously listed in the effective leases E2157 and E2158. Second portion would be that we move to approve the option to extend said leases E2157 and E2158 for them to exercise an additional 20-year term commencing on March 18th. 2040. At that point, it would be subject to renegotiations with Brownred. And that through the approval of the first two, the National Airport Authority will cause the notice of lease extension to be reported in the Hillsborough County Register of Deeds at the expense of the associates.
Okay, I'll second the motion. Any discussion, please?
Yeah, I'm just. I wish I could put my lawyer hat on well enough. I'm wondering if, in technicality, what we should be approving is that the renewal is as of February 5th.
from a liability standpoint, should somebody ever come along and make a claim that something happened, there's, by doing it March 18th, there's essentially no lease between February 5th and March 18th. And there's, so any of the terms that fall within the lease, some lawyer could probably make some statement. So I assumed coming into this that we were approving the renewal as of February 5th so that there was no lack of continuity. You know, so we were retaining the continuity of the leases and just essentially retroactively approving them to February 5th. And I'm kind of thinking that would be the right thing to do. And I guess I'm curious from a second standpoint, just the lease rate. I don't know how do you guys determine how they, does the lease rate change on renewal dates? Or
the rate?
Yeah.
No, they will have the,
so the
current adjusted biennial return rate adjustment. I'm sorry, not return. That will flow through till the next biennial adjustment.
Okay, so that whether we pick March 18th or February 5th,
the terms are the same.
Isn't going to impact the monthly rate they
pay. No, which is,
so I'm thinking
which
we
was,
should do it as of February 5th, and it provides a continuity, continuum.
Well, you mentioned the word liability, and I'm thinking, you know, isn't that kind of a separate thing? Because, for instance, my condo association carries liability insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, we have like $1 million per incident, $2 million, you know.
That's the thing I'm trying to look at from a lawyer standpoint.
And I think Wes might help us with this.
So, again, putting on my lawyer hat, I would ask the question, if their lease ended in February and you don't renew it until March, do they owe you rent for that period?
Right. See, that's the thing. If there's a gap in the lease,
right,
I think it should be as of February.
Is that true?
Yeah. The renewal should just continue on, and we're proving it retroactively.
Okay. Actually, that's an interesting question. I presume that they continue to pay us.
Yes. And does it revert to tenancy at will at that point when they don't have a lease, like most leases do?
And we'll fix this going forward. We'll come up with better systems. I've already talked about that. So I would, I guess I would make a motion to amend the motion to change the dates to February
4th. Commencing on the 6th day of February 24th?
Well, it would be, so the, currently, the current expiration is
terminating on the 5th day of February 24th.
So,
right, so
it would
be the 6th.
February 5th. And that would be the original language in the lease. So I don't think Paul's going to mind if they adjust it.
So February 6th, 2020, I would then, and then running in 20-year terms subsequent to that.
Instead of March 17th, February
9th. So if the lease expired on February 4th, it should pick up on February 5th.
Well, it's interesting, because the original lease says it expires on February 5th. The language here says it's February 4th.
Okay. Well, it says here, yes, commence on the 4th of 2000
and terminating on the 5th of
2020.
Oh, in that case, okay.
Yeah, so beginning on the 6th of 2020, February 6th, 2020, and then February 5th of 20...
Oh, that would be February 7th.
No,
sorry,
it would be end. It would end
February 5th.
We can do that.
February 7th, 2020.
No, February 5th.
5th.
We're still doing the 5th?
Jessica, help us.
So which year are you talking about?
I'm just going off of when it expired. So if they had it through 11/59/59 on the 5th, their new term would start on 12.
Yep,
on the 6th.
Correct.
So that would be February 6th, 2020 for an additional term. Right?
20 years.
Yep. Said term to run then from 2/6, 2020 through midnight of 2/6/2040.
The 5th, yes. To the 5th of 2040.
To the 5th, 2/5.
And then you just do the same thing for the
down
next
here
two.
The next day, right?
2040 to 2060.
We better not sign one of these up on leap year. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to amend said term to run from March 6th?
February 6th.
Yeah, I'm marking this up as I
know. Corona.
February 6th, 2020.
That's right. That's your body temperature.
Through midnight, February
5th.
February 5th, 2040.
Correct.
And then item 2 would then be a second 20-year commencing on
February 6th, 2040.
Okay.
All leases shall commence on the first day of the month.
Okay. And for formality's sake, I would second the modified motion. Any more thoughts on this? Any more discussion?
I just want to make a comment. I'm going to refuse myself on the vote because I'm a tenant in Hangar 129.
Fair enough.
For prevention of any appearance of conflict of interest.
Okay.
I do want to make another comment just related to the fact that we received notice late on this lease extension request. I spoke with Chris yesterday about the possibility of sending out a reminder to the various lessees. And also, based on Susan's spreadsheet, there's an upcoming list of expiration dates, and Chris and Susan, if they're willing, could send a 120-day notice or even a 90-day notice, just to friendly reminders such that the people will be submitted in advance.
We will do a 120-day reminder per our discussion last night. That way, because in the leases it says they have to give us 90, so that'll give them a month. To get their letter in hand to us.
And so I was Susan put the spreadsheet together for me, and I was working with Chris on it today to show him that I had a little bit of difficulty understanding which column was the next current expiration, and so I'll work with Susan to add that. And we'll sort it by upcoming expirations, and then we've talked about in QuickBooks and things how we can have those dates trigger so that we'll,
Tickles was your term.
Tickles, yeah.
On the reminder, and then there won't be any additional discussion about having to add on days.
Correct.
That's a good idea.
Well, I feel like a real overachiever now.
Okay.
And I will forward to this. I'm sure Susan will send it to everybody.
You sent it to me.
I did, okay. Great. Okay. Damn, I'm ahead of myself.
Are there any more discussion on the renewal? Motion to renew. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And any opposed? Okay, so that motion carries. So, upcoming events, I think Chris covered those.
Do we need to also do the transfer?
The transfer? No, the transfer was done a while ago. We moved from Archie to 127, 129 Associates.
Oh, so this is just information.
Right, correct.
This is information. Okay. God, I wasn't even paying attention to that part. I just read it as if they were kind of cascading. One was, and then the following one. Apologize for that. No, you're right. That was 2002.
My apologies. So upcoming events, again, we have the CAF, the museum opportunity, just covered that in the news report. So if we close out the meeting, public input.
Just a question for Chris. You were talking earlier about the tax way project coming up here. It's not like it was starting in July. Do you foresee any significant runway for this time?
This is the inner taxiway we're talking about, from basically the Airport Authority building all the way down beyond 127, 129, the inner taxiway, and in between all those hangars.
That's getting a bit rough, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. The Taxiway Alpha project, when we get to that, I don't anticipate runway closures, but there'll be some rerouting to get to the runways during that. We won't know, though, until that time comes.
We won't put units in charge of those.
No comment.
Those of us with little wheels always look forward to entertainment. Okay, so, director's comments. I'm going to put you on the spot, Jessica.
No. Just a couple. Thanks for, I guess, approving and nominating me to be on the board. Of course, I know the process is official to the mayor, but obviously that came from recommendations from the board and Chris. So I'm looking forward to serving. And obviously there's a period of time where I'm going to be getting up to speed, not just on the formality of the meetings, but all the history of the, you know, the formal processes here at the airport. So I encourage additional help from you. I'll ask when I don't know something.
Well, thank you. You know, we're looking forward to working with you, of course.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right. I'd like to welcome you as well. Glad to have you here. Great group of people. So, I'm new to the board as well, and I appreciate how everyone's welcomed me. Even though I never got to the point where I actually got my pilot's license, I took a license.
We're gonna fix that.
She's a CFI.
That's right.
Sweet.
A couple CFIs in this room, just in case.
I don't know. People in their 50s trying to learn how to fly makes me nervous in my own right. Anyway, I want to commend Chris and everyone on your staff for again having the 5010 show that the airport's in excellent condition.
Thank you.
Commended, and good luck with maintaining the social distancing during this whole process. And I know snowstorms are a double-edged sword. They bring revenue, but they're not something you want. I wish you well through all this.
Thank you.
Again, welcome to Jessica. You know, it's important. And thank you for volunteering to take your time. I realize that you're a pretty busy person. So I appreciate your investment in time. Chris, thanks very much to you and your staff. According to your report, you've been pretty busy this month. Kudos to Matt for catching that snow removal equipment.
That's cool. Very good. Thank you.
Maybe you'll let me drive that one sometime, too.
We'll talk about that. There's already a line.
Yeah.
I got a text today from Chris Hoffman, and all it said was dibs.
Yeah.
And I said, get in line. He goes, I already am. I'm ahead of you, he said.
Well, your machine is the crawler.
Though. Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I got.
Okay, go. Once again, welcome.
Thank you.
We're not social distance. We'll know each other a little better. Quick kudos to Chris and his team. I was here on that, I think that was February 26th, I told you those 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
When Captain Phillips' body was returned home, Chris did a great job with his team, just kind of getting everything pulled together. There's a lot of opportunity for chaos, and it all went very well, and I think it was very respectful. And I was here that whole morning with them, and I kind of just rode with them and just got to watch really mostly. And as a fellow Air Force guy, I was appreciative of that. I'm sure his family was too. So kudos for having. Thank you.
Thank you. While we're talking about that, Wes and his wife Ann donated the use of their flag that day, which we draped in front of the tower, and it's a gigantic flag. And
that's a small flag.
But it looked great on the tower. We really appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm glad we could do that.
Yeah, got a lot of compliments on it.
And it stayed flat the whole time.
Until they left.
As soon as the caravan left.
Yeah, the wind picked up. It got cold.
Yep, it was amazing. It was literally like an odd movie. You know, it was the weather, and it cleared out and got warm. The sun popped out into the whole ceremony. It was calm and nice, and the wind stayed still. And literally, as everybody pulled out, and we were just kind of hanging out, talking to the guys on the. On the crew flying to the next. Unbeknownst to us, we didn't realize until the end there was another soldier on board that his buddy, there's an Army enlisted man, a sergeant, who we kind of were trying to figure out why he was here, and later we found out, oh, he's escorting his friend who's in the mat.
So Oregon, that
day. Yeah, it was a pretty interesting, sobering kind of discussion. But as soon as those guys rolled out of here, boom, it got gray and cold, and the wind kicked up. It was really exactly there.
You'll give Bob Bird some kudos as well. He was a big help to us that day, marshaling the aircraft in. And Bob's also an Air Force veteran.
So as it relates to the Eagles, the youth program.
Young Eagles,
So I'm friends with Kim Kreider, who's one of the only Brigadier General women in the Air Force. She was here in Nashville. And, you know, if we could make the timing work out, I'm sure she'd be happy to be here if it made sense. You know, if it would be of any value, I'd be happy to reach out to her if she's a neighbor.
Okay. Other events as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thanks, gentlemen, for volunteering for that.
Okay. Be well, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. Keep our heads about ourselves.
Meeting adjourned.